This is Julio Rodriguez, and this is the Lookout Landing Podcast.
Hello, and welcome to the Lookout Landing Podcast. My name is John Troop, and I am the Deputy Managing Editor for LookoutLanding.com. I am joined today by three of my co-workers, friends, and fellow writers. On my left, we have Matthew Robertson. Matthew, how are you doing today?
I'm doing well. That was a real adventure in phrasing. I thought you were saying all of us were friends of your co-workers. I was like, that's a weird way to... Yeah, are you trying to tell us something?
On the one hand, it's true, but on the other hand, it's putting you too far at a distance. Yeah, you're all my friends.
There's degrees of separation if we're your coworkers' friends. That's like someone you don't actually like.
No.
I like you all. Kate,
hello.
Kate Prusser, also here, managing editor for Lookout Landing. We are just on the tail end of the Rule 4, is that what it's called? The Rule 4 draft. I don't really know what the other rules are other than Rule 5, but I'm assuming they're just as important, just as special. So we're going to be talking about that. And as well, to have a full sort of focus on that, we have to my right Grant Bronston as well, staff writer and my dear personal friend as our... The other people at this table,
seems like a real hierarchy.
I've known him for longer. What can I say?
That's fair.
Grant, how are you doing this evening?
I'm doing well. I'm wondering why I was asked to be on this pod since I have no special draft knowledge, but I'm happy to contribute any knowledge of Rule 4 that
I
can.
So, I think I can answer that. We are in your living room.
Also, Grant, who did I stick you with? Oh, God, you got stuck with Quinn Priester.
I did. Quinn Priester
Rockies,
went 18th for the Pirates.
Priester
went two picks before the Mariners.
Yeah.
Although, given that he is a high school pitcher, I think the fact that he's from high school meant that Jerry DePoto ruled him out instantly. So.
Yeah. I mean, maybe they would have taken him if he was there. Who knows? But
he's that kind of guy. He just wasn't. I would have been surprised if he went first.
Beautiful curveball, very advanced.
So, I have some questions. What is the Rule 4 draft?
Oh, it's just what they call the...
That's just the regular
draft?
The
Rule 5 draft is what they call the draft.
The Rule 5 draft.
Get the minor leaguers out.
I thought this was like a Dua Lipa situation. One, don't pick up the phone. Two, don't let him in.
We've got some new rules.
No, it's like the Latin name for the draft, basically. And I will say, to Grant's point, he is the only one among us who has sat in a draft room
Flex it out, baby.
It's Grant's.
I spent 2 years as the magnet boy. if anyone's wondering, who put the magnet for Alex Jackson, Gareth Morgan, Nick Neidert, or Andrew Moore on the board? That would be either me or the other intern that was doing it with me. So
I love you finishing stronger.
Well, year one was supposed to be the good draft, and then that one did not end up good. And year two was supposed to be the bad draft, and it ended up pretty nicely.
Yeah, if you want a review of all the drafts in the past, we did that on the site this past week. I think that it's always interesting to kind of look back in the past, and of course, it's hard not to play a what-if game. But it is very telling, I think, to look back at those 2013, 2014, even 2015 drafts and be like, oh, this is why we're in the position we're in. Yes, definitely DePoto has traded off a lot of the minor league depth.
Yeah.
And it's hard to see guys like Pablo Lopez succeeding for the Marlins.
Yeah.
Ryan Yarbrough or Nick Neidert. Ryan Yarbrough was a what round pick?
Ryan Yarbrough was a fourth round pick.
And there's a very interesting sort of reason that Ryan Yarbrough was a fourth round pick.
So in 2014, the Mariners did what the Mets did this season.
And this was one of the years that you were there.
This was. And I remember, there's a lot of strategy that goes into all of this. And basically, there's a guy that's got... an Excel spreadsheet, and they're punching in the numbers to make sure that no one's going to go over the pool, because the second that you go over your 15%, I believe it is, overages, you start losing draft picks, which is a penalty that no team is really willing to pay.
Has any team ever paid?
No team has ever done that
in
the 4 or 5 years they've been under the system.
Yeah.
And so what the Mariners decided to do was to put all of their resources into taking Gareth Morgan and giving him a $2 million bonus. at a slot value of about $750,000.
Mm-hmm. Oh, what is this taste in my mouth?
It's Gareth, baby.
Gareth.
So bitter.
And then because Alex Jackson fell to them at number six when many thought he might go earlier, and his agent was Scott Boris, he required a $4.2 million bonus to sign above the $3.6 million slot value.
Which was seen as something that should have been a good thing.
That, yeah, yes. Yeah, that made sense.
That pick was the slam dunk. Gareth Morgan was okay at best.
Yeah.
But because they needed to afford those two players, they then needed to save a lot of money from the slot values of rounds 3 through 10.
Right.
So that's where Austin Cusino came into play, so he was a little bit under. And then rounds 4 through 10, every single round, the Mariners took a college senior. And you take college seniors because they have very little leverage in the process. Whereas a high school senior could go to college, right. A college junior could go back to college for a senior year. A college senior doesn't have any recourse other than maybe joining an independent league if they don't actually sign with the team.
And they're smart.
And they're smart people.
I've read at least probably 3 books.
The reason that we say this is the Mets strategy this year is the Mets found that Matthew Allen had fallen to them in the second round?
It was the third round. Because it was the first round of day two.
So it was the first round of day two. So Matthew Allen, who's considered mostly the top high school pitcher, is still on the board. He, unlike some of... Vanderbilt is a really hard commitment to buy guys out of, but Matthew Allen had his price, and people felt like he could be bought out of his college commitment. And so the Mets, like, swung for it. They swung for a first-round talent in the third round. They're still trying to ease the stink of losing Jared Kelnick off of them.
Heard of him.
So it was cagey, and then they, like, just went under slot on every single pick. They basically punted the whole rest of their draft to be able to afford Matthew Allen. Yeah. So
do any of
we'll
you
see
know,
how that goes.
Do any of you know, like, what the record is for, like, highest draft pick to be traded less than a year after their pick? Like, Kelenic's got to be.
Really,
when was Trey
question.
Turner picked?
That's a great question. I would guess like 2012-ish.
Well, so the rule has been, I believe they changed it this year, you could not be traded for a year until a year after you were picked. And Trey Turner was traded as a player to be named later, who only at the 1 year point did everyone reveal that the player to be named later was Trey Turner.
Right, which feels like a circumvention.
So it was a circumventing of the rules. Although, really screwed the Padres, right? It was the Padres who took him.
Was
the deal. Yeah. We're gonna get a little bit deeper into this, but we're gonna talk on this episode here. We're gonna talk
this episode of Lookout.
Last time on Lookout Landing. No. We're gonna talk a lot of draft talk, just because that's what's been happening, and because the team itself, though mildly more competitive this week. Is not super hot.
For me, the biggest news of this week is that the Mariners are wearing teal all the time.
Yeah.
I love
that rally.
Yeah, I'm a big fan.
So, you know, there are still people on the team who are trying to win.
Well, yeah, that's the thing about tanking. None of the players are trying to lose. It's the organization
putting... Put around other players who can't help them.
It's not like Jerry's in the dugout every day before the game, like, sliding someone a 20. He's like, hey, maybe throw a couple balls right down the middle tonight.
No.
Although, every man has his price.
I don't think $20 is any of those men's price, though.
How much could one pitcher cost? $20?
Mike Leake's Mac
Williams. So,
we should talk about Mac Williams question, what the fuck?
So, I was at today's game with my brother.
I have a Braden Bishop injury update as well.
Oh, wonderful. Okay. So, I was at today's game, which was the 14-inning, 8-7 loss to the Astros. With my brother and my nephews, and they are, I would say, more casual, but, you know, enthusiastic fans. And, you know, both the kids love baseball. They are diehard Mac Williamson fans at this point, just after one day, because he hit a homer in his first plate appearance.
Sure. That is
and
loud.
That's all you need. And we saw him. He's gigantic. He has, like, he was the closest to Vogelback in terms of, like, bicep width on the team.
Vogelback.
Which, you know, is still, like, not close.
Right.
But Was very interesting to see. So,
and so what are we thinking? 400, 500 home runs?
Yeah, I think so. Right. I think so. Yeah, give him some time. Give him some
time. That was my projection for this season. He's gonna
late bloomer.
Obliterate every record.
Yeah, you know, it'll be tough in a platoon.
He is Matt Christopher's, the kid who only hit homers.
Yes. Yeah, and the problem before was that he was in San Francisco. That was the only thing holding him back.
It's a pitcher's park. Now he's in
Seattle, where the ball jumps.
Yeah, Haven.
Yeah.
I will note that he had a very similar start to his career as a Giant. I believe he hit a home run in his first at-bat, or his first day as a... As a Giant.
First impressions, I get it.
Yeah. I mean, I appreciate
that. I've done that at several jobs. You go in, you work really hard, then you do nothing for a week. It's beautiful. I get it, Mac.
True.
Although Ian Miller could have also done this.
Are we gonna, I mean, this is
your platform.
I don't wanna derail.
Here's what I want to hear. Because Kate, you mentioned you had a Braden Bishop.
I do have a Braden Bishop.
So I want to hear that, and then I want to hear, because I know it's somewhat surprising that the team went to Mac Williamson, who was literally
out of the organization,
and literally officially signed the day he was brought in,
right?
To fill an injury spot. Kate, what's the deal on Braden Bishop's lacerated spleen?
Braden Bishop's lacerated spleen did require him going to the hospital. He has been in the hospital. The surgeons were apparently baffled by what was going on.
It's never good.
Always good.
But they didn't have to remove the spleen, but it is like a 4 to 5 week recovery timeline. So.
Yeah, so, I mean, I would not mess with that
The most notable recent baseball lacerated spleen was David Dahl of the Rockies.
Oh, really? Yeah,
and I don't recall specifically what his time frame was. I know he missed probably... a month or at least over a month, but it's something that players come back from and are fine. It just takes a while.
And it's one of those things where like kind of the first 24 hours are the scary thing, because like when we say lacerated, it's really ruptured, and so it's like one of those bad insides coming out kind of thing. And whenever the insides of an organ are coming out into the rest of your body, like, that's not a party that they're invited to.
Personally.
Yeah, no.
I don't know about you, the three of you, but I hate
it. I'm on the spleen Wikipedia page. Don't love it. It's real gross. There's pulp in your spleen?
Yeah.
I didn't know any of that.
Yeah, we're going to need to consult team or cite future doctors at Gottschalk on the spleen's value. Mm-hmm.
I think it's just one of those things that, like, you want it to work, and if it doesn't work, you got problems.
I can give us a David Dahl update. So
yeah, please do.
In 2015, when he was in Double A, he was in a serious collision, and
with a player,
May 28th, unclear.
What?
At the stadium,
just running into shit,
ran into something or other
at full speed,
and he sustained a grade 4 laceration of his spleen. He had two choices.
Oh, it comes in grades, like a hamstring strain.
Option one was to wait several months for the spleen to heal, miss most or all of the season, and run the risk of suffering a recurrence of the injury on something as innocuous as a dive back into first base.
Okay, definitely don't pick that one.
Option two is consent to have the organ removed, which would expedite the rehab process and possibly complicate his life down the road.
Wow.
So, the gritty spark plug that he is, David Dahl and his family chose the second option. 3 days later, he had a splenectomy, where they remove your spleen.
Of course.
And by mid-July, he was back on the field.
So he literally gave his spleen to the game.
Mm-hmm.
He did.
Charge it to the game, folks. That's crazy. I think football, it happens fairly often.
I mean, it's a trauma injury, right? So it kind of makes sense.
But Braden wasn't doing anything.
He got hit in the ribs.
That's gnarly, honestly.
Yeah, no, it's bad, and he gets hit by pitches kind of a lot.
That's the grit.
Really upsetting.
Can't teach that.
I am upset though, because I did want them to bring up Ian Miller,
right,
who has been in the organization for 7 years.
La Flama Blanca.
La Flama Bianca. He has just been grinding and grinding and gritting and grinding, and I'm hoping that the reason they didn't bring him up is that they do not want to lose him once they inevitably have to DFA whoever this person is who's up kind of
Mac
space. Yeah, Mac tonight. Which only I am old enough to get that reference. No one else gets that reference.
Sure, there's like a moon.
I didn't even realize there was a reference.
Yeah, it is the moon.
It's a McDonald's thing. When McDonald's first started serving late night, like back in the day, yeah. Children.
Kate has lit a candle and, on a plate and put on a sleeping cap. This is crazy.
Back in the day. McDonald's used to close kind of early, and so when they first started extending it, like, past 10 p.m., they did it with this Mac Tonight promotion that was a giant moon that he's so... What does he look like?
He looks cool. I'm looking at him right
like
now.
Sunglasses.
This guy,
right? Like
this guy fucks,
he's
I'll
sunglasses
say.
Sunglasses
oh,
night,
yeah.
Right?
He's got like, sun, he's a giant blue yeah. moon, and he's got sunglasses
He
kind of
looks like
on.
Jay Leno.
He kind of looks like Jay Leno. He Ooh, also... He looks he like Ray like Charles. I think he's definitely supposed to be Ray Charles.
I mean,
all right.
He's got sunglasses on.
He's supposed to... But, I mean, I think he's supposed to be... And he played... Well, the thing is, he played the piano. Like,
okay.
He said... That, yeah. So
oh,
I think he was very much supposed to be kind of a spoof on Ray Charles.
I did find a headline that says, Rape, Murder, Violent Racism, the weirdest McDonald's ad campaign
the
ever.
Fuck?
So y'all can search that out on your own.
Yeah,
but it involves Mac.
For that.
28 years ago
now,
in 2014.
Okay.
So it's aged poorly.
Was Mac Tonight, like, related to the whole, like, Grimace, Mayor McCheese
Yeah, is
this
the same
thing?
Universe?
No, I mean, that's the
McDonald's cinematic
new. I'm sorry, McDonald Land.
Oh,
McDonald Land.
Sure.
I mean, it was, like, concurrent as far as time goes. But, yeah, and there was, like, a time where there were, like, Mac Tonight giveaways and the Happy Meal.
Is that a
stuff.
Verb? Like everybody Mac tonight?
Everybody Mac tonight.
Yeah.
No.
This
mean,
sounds
it was
like
just
a Mac
tonight.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. But anyway, it was meant to promote their new late night menu, and it's a very creepy mascot because he is just a giant blue moon on a human body, and
like
I'm
cool
never
sunglasses.
Yeah, it's true. Sunglasses have never let anyone.
You can put sunglasses on anything, and it'll look cool. Mm. You ever seen a baby in sunglasses? Hilarious.
Oh, the coolest.
A dog in sunglasses.
Oh, don't get me started.
One of our prospects tweeted a picture of a dog in sunglasses the other day. And
Isabel, if you're listening,
yeah,
you know what to do.
I have to go back and figure out who that is.
Put him in.
Is that how that works?
That is
yeah.
Valid.
If you just say it out loud and say Isabel, she puts him in the Hall of Fame.
All right. So
okay, good to know.
I'm
spending a lot of time on getting Edgar in there.
I'm stabbing like a hook into the fact that someone said the word prospects and dragging that towards
yes, okay,
the fact
right.
that we're going to talk about the
yes. we all remember.
So the Mariners completed, along with every other team, so it's not exactly special, the draft this week. We had 41 picks.
Mm-hmm.
Thank
you, Comp.
Yeah.
C.
Thank
Comp
you, Carlos
D,
Santana
whatever.
/ Cleveland.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
Smooth.
Yeah, it was fantastic. And we had a pretty, well, I would say pretty surprising draft class.
This one taught me that Jerry DePoto has a type. He knows what he was looking for, and he pursued it.
It is very true. So the Mariners went 8 college pitchers, I believe, in the first 10 rounds.
Yeah, the first 5 were college pitchers.
First 5
and
were
then,
college
and
pitchers.
And then our boy Austin Shenton, and then Limoncelli from Horseheads, New York.
Yeah. And then the rest were college pitchers.
Well, Adam Macko is from high school, and
yeah.
then
oh, thank
and
you.
Then Elon, Florida State, Baylor, Fresno State.
Beautiful. Okay.
But Florida State was a shortstop, so
yes.
there's no matter what, there's a heavy college lean to these picks.
Definitely.
So
I mean, I broke out all the numbers in a tweet, which I now can't remember, even though I made you help me with the numbers.
Regardless, it was heavily leaned towards
it was like
college
9
pitchers.
Infielders,
yeah,
6 outfielders,
3 catchers,
and all the rest were pitchers.
And, yeah. One lefty, right? Everyone else
one
is
lefty
right-handed?
High school
one
or
college
one lefty
left,
college.
No, one
two
college
lefty,
yeah.
2 high school lefties.
There it is.
So, a ton of pitching, which, on
so
the one hand...
Pitching.
Is something that we have been clamoring for, generally.
Yes.
We've been clamoring
for...
Yeah. The Mariners have rebuilt their farm system into a pretty decent farm system. It's not the best farm system, but it's a pretty decent farm system.
It's a middle of the road.
Exactly.
It's Cincinnati. It's like a medium farm system.
From what I understand about farms, we're waiting for the harvest to bloom. Like everything is planted, and then now the harvest is coming.
Very much so. You know,
is that how farms work?
Matthew, I think I can tell that you're a suburban kid that went to San Diego for college.
Wow. Wow.
And I think this is someone who has always lived there.
Yeah, I was going to say, let's talk about
all that New Haven farmland.
Let's talk about Grant's past. Denying my sister admission to Yale University. It's on wax. It is on wax.
Oh, man.
At some point.
All right.
I'd rather talk about Grant's pass. All right.
So. So. I won't speak for everyone, but I'm pleased that the Mariners decided, hey, we don't have enough pitching depth in this farm system.
Yes.
We got outfield. They got outfielders this offseason, and most of those outfielders have been the best performers in the minor league system.
And again, you can find all of this on the site, where we did a positional breakdown. But what we concluded of our positional breakdown was, in the year that's passed since we did it last, last year, outfielder was good-ish. Infielder was catcher was and starting pitching was and now this year catching is
hey
outfielders
every position is the Fonz now.
Infielders are
that's not the Fonz
and starting pitching is still
The starting pitching is Mr. Yuck.
Pitching is absolutely Mr. I think starting pitching is the worst. Positionally, like, yes, we're lacking infielders here and there, but starting pitching is weak from start to finish. It is Logan Gilbert, and then it is a huge yawning chasm, and then it's a bunch of guys that you are just, like, really crossing your fingers and hoping can maintain their success. It's your Darren McCaggins. It's your LJ Newsom's. It's your.
I put Justin Dunn a little bit.
I would put. Just, I would put Justin Dunn at the I'm so concerned about the command still. So he's not consistent, but I mean Logan Gilbert is still working. But you look at the package that Logan Gilbert has, and even though he's like, hey, no.
Even though he's down a ways, that man is 6'6".
He is still working on refining a lot of stuff, but you look at that and you're like, I see a major league skill set in that mix. But yeah, it's definitely the weakest, so it was great to have a draft that aggressively addressed that weakness.
Yes. Yeah. And then the first position player was third base, which we also thought is an area
definitely the weakest.
You know, that could use some improvement.
So these are all things that are that I certainly appreciated that. I don't think there were. I mean, in the first round, they took George Kirby, right-handed pitcher out of Elon. That's a guy who was pretty much exactly. He was pretty much ranked about there, like right about there. Yep. A lot of people mocked him there. It made sense. They took him.
Let's point second out too that this is one of the weaker draft classes that we've seen.
So,
and I have never seen a draft that went 1 to 20. Pretty much exactly like the mocks had it laid out.
Yeah.
Like a couple surprises here and there. I know we all liked Keone Kavako.
Yeah.
Me especially.
Jumped up into the early. Yeah. I mean, mostly that draft progressed until you got to like pick 13 or so, and then there were some curveballs thrown in. And then after the Mariners pick, like 21 on, it was just a free for all. Like, I could not have predicted any of those picks from there on. If you told me who the pick before was, I would not have been able to get that. But
And that is sort of where things essentially diverge for what this draft was, right? I mean, because like they got a lot of pitchers, which is a organizational need. They got some middle and left side infielders, which is an organizational need. That is great. Did they go for players who on the one hand, it's really hard to say because we don't know what they think they'll be able to develop best. But do we think they left best, like the best talent out there at times because they were addressing organizational need.
Yeah, I would say it's, as you said, John, it's almost impossible to know without seeing their draft board. As a noted and avowed non-prospect expert, I certainly can't claim to say, oh, here are the five position players I would have taken over George Kirby or Brandon Williamson or any of that. But, you know, I definitely think that when you're drafting in MLB draft, given that any player you take is at the very best a year and a half or 2 years away from the big leagues, and much more probably 3 or 4 years away, you don't draft for need, whether in the major or minor league system. You will eventually draft for depth in the later rounds to make sure you have enough players for your for all of your teams.
Sure.
But you really are focusing on getting the best talent there. I would love to have the problem of we have too many good outfield prospects, and we're going to have to trade one of them for something else.
And we're getting close to that, right?
We are getting close to potentially
with Jared Kelnick being on this incredibly accelerated track, with Jake Fraley just, like, destroying Arkansas. Kyle Lewis is starting to show, like, some life.
Yeah.
We have Don Thompson Williams.
If all the good outcomes happen for those guys, that sounds like a great outcome for us to have.
We have Julio.
But what I worry about is if you take all these college pitchers, it really seems like there's a good chance that you're just taking the college pitchers because you really want college pitching and not because you think those guys are the best guys. Maybe they were the best guys on their board. We don't know. Only Tom Allison and the rest of the scouting team can answer that one.
It's really similar to what they did last year when they clustered a lot of catcher picks together. We did catcher in the third with Kyle Raleigh. We did catcher in the seventh with Jake Enchia. I can't remember what that was. And then we did catcher again with Dean Navarez. And I don't think that they were betting on Dean Navarez being anything, but Dean Navarez can hit. And all of a sudden you have Cal, Dean Navarez, and Chia all clustered at the same level, all performing. I mean, Cal's in high A, but you have them all performing. But again, it's a good problem to have. As I interviewed Dean Navarez this offseason, and he was like, everybody always needs a catcher. Like, everybody always needs someone who's good. And if you have a bunch of guys who are all kind of at the same level and they're all competing against each other and each trying to outdo the other, you know, it's good to trade from a position of strength.
That's an interesting idea. I wonder if there is any value in trying to cluster player types to develop together in the same way that, you know, it could you can imagine it being helpful for Jared Kelnick, for example, to have Julio Rodriguez at a similar level for the two of them to kind of be challenging each other and always working together and imagining a future where they're playing and contributing for the same major league team. Maybe there is value in having a whole lot of pitchers, you know, rise through the system together, or having a group of catchers that are learning and kind of going back and forth with each other with the goal of we're all going to eventually be major leaguers and hopefully we're going to do it for this team.
I mean, it also makes it easy to, if you have them all literally at the same level, it makes it easy to distribute your coaching resources to, like, okay, you have Tony Arnerich, who is our catching coordinator. If you have two of the best catchers in the system with Dean Navarez and Jake Enchia both at the West Virginia Power, send him there and he can spend a lot of time there working with those guys. So
yeah. The other thing I want to talk about in regards to draft strategy, we've definitely seen a strong preference for DePoto for college players in the last few drafts. And it's been really, you know, he was hired by the Mariners in the fall of 2015.
Right.
And the first draft that he then oversaw was 2016, but it's actually the 2017 draft was the first where he installed the scouting director after Tom McNamara stepped down or was moved to special assistant.
Yeah.
But basically means he's now, you know, a voice in the room, but not the scouting director making the call with Jerry.
Not Lavos.
And since then, you know, the one real high school player that was picked near the top that they took was Sam Carlson.
Mm-hmm.
And I think Sam Carlson was an example of a player that no one really thought was going to get to the Seattle. And once they realized that they actually were going to have a chance at him, they said, yeah, he's a good enough value that we'll take advantage of this and we'll stop the free fall here.
Yeah.
But that doesn't mean, you know, that's an example of the DePoto and the Mariners recognizing that good value was available and changing their strategy to adapt to that. That's not saying that he was part of their strategy. Yeah. I don't think he was. I think their strategy really is, first and foremost, we're going for college players who we think are good. And a lot of the time, where they see the upside for these college players is at small schools. They think that the small school college guys are maybe a little under-scouted, or their dominance will translate more to better competition than one than someone else might imagine.
And that's... I know that we have Matthews in contact with some of the guys from Elon.
I got the plug at Elon.
Yeah, we got the
Let's not give away our sources.
It's all because you established this great relationship with Nick Zamorelli.
I sure
the
did.
Third,
it's mostly with his family.
Well, I mean, they're a very tight knit family, the Zamorellis.
Yeah, I mean, it's an Italian situation where you know you like one of them, then you have 15 people who also then like you.
Yes,
it's
all, exactly. You know, it's a package deal.
We all dine together. We're breaking bread.
I like how you slipped in
a little bit New York guy came out there. No, but yeah, the Mariners clearly have something going on with Elon University where they like the way things are done there, or maybe like Grant said, they think that those guys are under scouted. Maybe they have some sort of thing that's being taught at Elon University that other schools aren't teaching.
Because they've gone both position player and pitcher out of there. They've gone Ryan Ogren, who is a shortstop. Nick Zamorelli, who's kind of a first, third DH type.
And then two pitchers in this draft. Mm-hmm. Kirby and Ty Adcock.
Who has a fun Instagram presence.
He's very... he's very goofy looking. Yeah. He's got some hair.
Big boy.
Large man. Bro. Yeah, so keep your ears to the street for my my collab with Elon University. It'll be coming out at some point.
So here's something I will say. So I think there is a very reasonable case, and I think we feel this way when we follow the draft, that like that you want to look for upside, and that a great way of looking for upside is looking at those high school players. There, especially for pitchers, and there was actually a very interesting article on Fangraphs about this, about how the player development works in college, and how pitching player development has been pretty good in some colleges. And that hitting development, there isn't really like a comparable version of that for the college level. And so there have been a number of high school hitters who have come straight out of high school and have ultimately become really good players. The top 10 players, just purely by FWAR, for 2018, for last year, we had, I believe I'm just by going through this, 8 college pitchers and 2 international signees.
Interesting.
I mean, you know, that's a very sort of slim way of looking at this. But, like, the last several years, the best pitchers in baseball have been college guys. Pitchers. You know, and it's not even just, like, guys who have been around for a while. Like, Verlander's in there and Scherzer's in there. But, like, DeGrom is not all that far in the past. Right. Like Gerrit Cole, Patrick Corbin, Trevor Bauer. Like, you know, and that's not to say like those guys became who they were because of the college that they went to. But like that is, taking a college pitcher is not necessarily taking the low upside shot, especially if it's from a place like Logan Gilbert, where it's like Stetson has a really
good track record.
Oh, you know, DeGrom and Kluber.
That's what I was going to say. Like, it's an interesting mix. You have DeGrom from Stetson, you have Verlander from Old Dominion, and then you also have like Gerrit Cole and Bauer, who went to UCLA, Aaron Nola,
was
LSU.
Baby, right?
Scherzer's Mizzou.
Oh, Mizzou, that's right. I knew it was SEC.
Yeah. like Chris Sale wasn't on this list, but he's from Florida Gulf Coast. Like, it's with baseball, like, you nobody really knows. Like,
so it's a really interesting testament, or not testament, but it's a really interesting gauge, I guess, of the Mariners have had some success, and it's not necessarily looked great this year, but especially last year in getting players and making slight adjustments, especially in like mechanics, to maximize their skill set. We're talking Marco Gonzalez, we're talking Wade LeBlanc, we're talking James Paxton, guys who made a slight adjustment, especially mechanically, and we're able to get more out of it. And, you know, this offseason we've seen that more on the minor league level with guys like LJ Newsome and Reggie McClain, adding a bunch of velocity by becoming more efficient with their motion and, you know, as well as obviously
we pump them full of drugs. At
exactly.
Gas.
Gas can for the gas is just strength.
All right.
Speaking of pitchers pumped with drugs,
yeah.
Do we think Mike Leake gets traded this week?
Nailed it!
Unbelievable.
Another college pitcher.
ASU. I don't incriminate myself. I don't think Mike Leake is on drugs. That was just pure.
We have a long standing joke about Mike Leake kind of being a stoner type.
But. Yeah, which is 100%.
And he's from San Diego.
Yeah.
Right?
It 100% comes from gestures at everything about him. It's not like we have some intel, it's just from looking at him.
Yeah.
I want to take a quick time out and just say part of John's conversation. Isaiah Campbell, who is our comp balance, whatever pick, the Encarnacion pick, worked with Brian DeLunas at his pitching lab.
Came from Arkansas, but
yeah, I mean, Brian DeLunas has worked with a lot of the Midwest for whatever reason.
Well, because he was from Missouri. He was set in Missouri. He was set in St. Louis. So
yes, I mean, Brian DeLunas is there. Campbell is from Kansas, but went to school in... Anyway, but that's where you see a lot of the interesting... there's a lot of interesting pitching stuff that is going on. And it's interesting, too, to see how, like, sometimes that's translating at the pro level. So anyway, wanted to say that very quickly.
Yeah.
No,
back to Mike Leake taking the pot or whatever.
No, that's not what I was driving at. It was just
Mike Leake. Mike Leake trade.
Actually, can we do a quick little experiment?
Trade.
I want everyone at home, too, and everyone at the table, close your eyes.
Mm.
Try to... You can picture Mike Leake's face, right? Let's say he's sitting down.
He's smiling.
Let's say he's sitting down for an interview with Angie Mentink.
Yeah.
What does his voice sound like? Can anyone, like, hear Mike Leake's voice right now? I have no idea what his voice sounds like.
It's the voice of the car wash attendant handing, holding the chamois who's telling me to pull forward.
But is that gravelly? Is that...
No.
Like, what's up, bro, voice?
Like,
I bet it'd be like NPR, like stoner NPR voice, where it's like very like, welcome.
So I heard it recently only because they had him and Domingo Santana as the like joint endgame interview.
Yeah, when he went on his congratulations, Mike Leake.
Yeah, shout
out to you. Most strikes ever thrown in his career.
Shouts to that trade value.
Yes, good job, buddy.
Yeah, it's good looking. He is... So we heard this rumor.
Of course.
Not we. I mean, well, we heard it, but everyone heard it, or should have heard it. But
Ryan Divish wrote an article.
Yeah. Sometimes we hear things.
Ryan Divish may have written the article, but we read this article.
What is more noble?
Yeah, exactly.
Riddle yourself that.
Exactly. Supporting local journalism.
It's great.
So... Supposedly, Mike Leake is being discussed heavily in trade rumors between the Mariners and the Diamondbacks.
Yes.
Leake is from...
San Diego area.
From San Diego.
Did college in Arizona.
Exactly.
Seems like a good fit.
His family's in the area.
He can hit in the
his
National
family
League.
Family lives in the area because his dad fell off a roof.
Yes.
That of a retirement home that he was supposed to be building and is like basically kind of paralyzed from the waist down and is in incredible pain.
Yeah.
And when Mike Leake was being dealt
to the Mariners initially.
No, I'm sorry. When Mike Leake was going to sign when he was a free agent, he really wanted to go to Arizona because it was a huge personal wish of his.
Sure.
He wanted to go to Arizona so he could be close to his dad. His dad can't fly. It hurts him.
Yeah.
Or he can, but it's like it causes him physical pain. He really wanted to be in Arizona so he could be close to his dad. His parents could come to the games. And Arizona kind of dicked him over, I think, where they said like they were interested, and then they went and signed Corbin.
I think they had Greinke. Corbin. Probably was Grinky.
It was definitely Grinky, but then they went bigger. It was two things. They spent money on two things because it was one, and he was like, "Whoa," and then it was the other, and he was like, "Oh, definitely not." And so then the Cardinals offered him, and he just kind of had to take the money. So
interesting.
I am personally, on a personal level, not just a baseball level, but on a personal level, I am rooting for Mike Leake to be able to get back to Arizona.
Yeah, make his voice heard.
So it would make a lot of sense. I mean, obviously, we mentioned a little bit, like, he's a good hitter for a pitcher.
Even he is. He's a benefit to your national league.
He's one of the best hitting pitchers in the league at this point.
He actually is. Marco is too.
Yeah,
well, that's really like allegedly. Saying that punch to the face only hurt me a little.
Sure,
bit.
But I mean, it makes it like he was like the amount better that makes your team, right? Like if you have like. A below average offensive player as your pitcher, like as a pitcher hitter, as opposed to like a guaranteed out.
Yeah.
That is like a sneaky way that you can get value, especially like as long as the NL continues to have pitchers hit, which is probably not that long, if we're being honest.
Oh my god, I hope so.
I hope they keep it.
I don't have a problem with that. Maybe that's my hottest take in baseball, guys.
No, it's not that hot.
I love the idiosyncrasy of no DH in the NL, DH in the AL.
I will note right now that Grant has really sharp canine teeth, and he might, might be a vampire who is sent to sow dissent
very pale.
Yeah, he is you're really also pale. Pretty pale.
Blood in my
off-time. Yeah, so anyway.
Yeah, that also has set me off.
He's like also...
That also made me curious. That he's
the
a
fact
boy.
That he won't go out in the sunshine.
Yeah, there's a lot of clues here. He's also wearing a Montreal Expos shirt, which is a dead entity that he is also...
They had a dome. And they had a dome.
They did have a dome, so there's no sun.
Yeah. All right, so Grant is a vampire, confirmed.
Yeah, and...
But he likes the draft, so what are you going to do?
I'm not good at liking the draft, but I do like it, yes.
I'm still hung up on his Mike Leake's voice.
Are we going to Mike Leake trade back?
Sorry, yeah.
Gonna...
So, is there, I guess, do you guys expect that there would be much of a market? I can't anticipate there would be much of a market, but the only thing that makes me curious is the Mariners ate a lot of money on Jay Bruce.
Oh my God, they ate so much money.
And
should we talk about that very briefly? Like the Jay Bruce trade?
Sure.
Because
I feel
I took some flack on this for the account because I was not happy about this trade.
No.
I thought it was a poor value. Like, you're trading with Philly, who is number one, kind of desperate.
Yep.
They had Odubel Herrera has a DV thing and might not be back.
A long time.
Who knows? Yeah. I mean, it really, those things are always kind of hard to predict. And I mean, Julio Urias is back with the
Yeah.
You got it.
But that was like it was a public thing where
someone was
shoved in a parking lot.
Right. They're obviously down someone in that arena, or they should be for the rest of the year. And then we have Kutch tearing his ACL.
Which was post-trade.
I know, which is so bad. Ugh!
Yeah.
For Kutch, too.
For him.
Mostly for the Mariners.
But also for us.
Mostly the Mariners are suffering.
Yeah, that's the important thing to
but
keep in
like,
mind.
They're...
I felt like my ACL was torn when I was
training. It's such a bummer. So we were hoping the Mariners would eat a fair amount of salary, and
they did.
And we were also hoping that when trading with Philadelphia, who is one of the most pitching-rich systems in MLB, we were hoping they would maybe come out with a pitcher. They did not.
We thought.
They came out with
Jake Shiner.
Shiner. What? So like a 20, what is he, 29, and he's in high A, right?
He's
23.
Okay, fine. He's 23 and he's in high A.
Best age to be.
Basically the same thing.
Barely age appropriate. Whatever. A utility player, like, no, just in all of my, I went over all the lists of Philly. I looked at all their like fringe top 30 guys. I looked at guys who were deeper on the, he never crossed my radar. So, I mean, that's what the trade value was perceived as for Jay Bruce. It, with us eating most of the contract. So that was... And man, prospects are worth their weight in gold, and we've just been trading them away like nothing.
Right, and there's the emotional aspect of losing Jay Bruce.
Losing team dad.
I feel
Jay
like my
Bruce.
Parents got divorced again.
Who like immediately went to Philly and like has a great new family and went to Disneyland.
Right,
with them, like right.
He's already
off the
posting
bat.
Pictures on social media.
Right,
it's like we're still here, Dad.
Yeah, Jay Bruce.
Just come home, Dad.
He hit what? Was it 7 home runs?
Yeah,
he hit
in
7
one game.
Home runs?
Yeah, people forget the 7 home run game.
He was like going to be almost as good as Mac Williamson this season.
It's going to be a tough race for MVP.
It's a grand slam.
Although now they're in opposite leagues.
Yeah. He pitched a shutout ring.
All right. He married my mom. He's a versatile player.
All right.
Bruce, we love you and we miss you.
So...
More than
Mike Leake, here's what I said.
Ah, back to this.
Yes!
Yeah. So if that's fucking Jay Bruce's trade value, what the fuck is
Mike We're going to get a cactus, a surfboard, and some Marlboro Reds.
Yeah. Surfboard!
Surfboard!
What kind of cigarettes do you think Mike Leake smokes?
Pall Malls.
No, I think he's a little above that.
No, I think he smokes the oldest man one, which I think is Pall Malls.
You
so
think?
I'm
it doesn't seem very beachy, though. I could see him rolling his own American Spirit.
Oh, that's it. That's what he does. That's
yeah, because he doesn't trust big tobacco.
Yep, you win.
Yeah, I mean, I did live in San Diego, so I've met a million Mike Leakes.
There are a lot of cigarette brands.
Oh, yeah.
I just looked up cigarette brands, and they go for a while.
John just found out about cigarettes.
Our sweet summer child.
What is
all right, realistically, what could we get for Mike Leake? Because today, staff writer Joe Doyle.
Joe Doyle rules.
Shout out, Joe.
This is our first podcast since Joe's been a member.
Yes,
of,
hello.
Member of
yes,
Joe.
We have a new member of the team who is focused on the minors, also writes for Baseball America, has lots of scout contacts, so is able to give us
we got big
dirt.
Deets.
I learned a lot from this article, like every single player that he lists I had never heard of.
Literally a lot.
One of them is named Donatella, so he might be a Ninja Turtle. I would love
definitely
him on the team.
Also might be Josh Lyman's assistant, we're not sure which.
I don't know what that means.
West Wing jokes aren't going over well in this crowd. All right.
No. Sorry, Grant.
No, this is good. I got you.
But yeah,
if you understood that reference, please at me on Twitter. I would love to hear from you.
Yeah, but to reel this back in, Joe lists some possible options for a trade with Arizona, who the Mariners have been linked to with Mike Leake. So if you're interested in that, there's some guys, multiple positions. There's a third baseman, Drew Ellis, a shortstop named Blaze, which we would all probably be happy about.
Blaze Alexander?
That is, Joe wrote it. It's on the site.
No, there's no way that they would never give us. Blaze Alexander was a top prospect like 2 years ago, last year.
Well.
He has an infield throwing arm that was clocked as the fastest in his draft class. Like, I don't think he's coming back for Mike Leake.
What if I told you he's hitting 239 and he's tanking on purpose to get out of Arizona?
Maybe,
and come to Seattle.
Maybe. I mean, he's,
can't
he's a
rule
fun
it out.
Guy. He does actually have a weird Seattle connection that I can't remember off the top of my head, but it exists.
It's the name Blaze, as it is.
Blaze!
His name was legalized in 2016.
He also named.
And Arizona persecutes him.
He also
him
named
heavily.
LT Tolbert, right?
Yeah.
Who's also, I think, not anyone who's going anywhere.
Well, not with that attitude.
He's personally torturing the Modesto Nuts on like a nightly basis. I think that the prospect return for Mike Leake will be disappointing.
Well, I don't think it would be. I guess part of it is Mike Leake has a no trade clause, so
yeah,
Mike
that's a problem.
So
although
to
he would clearly waive it.
Yeah,
for
Yeah,
he
would waive it.
Clearly
for,
waive it.
Absolutely,
for
he'd waive it for Arizona. He'd waive it for probably San Diego, which again, both close enough to Arizona relative to Seattle.
Right.
I mean, he was excited to come to Seattle from St. Louis because
right,
they had
absolutely.
Spring training in
sure.
Arizona.
Yeah.
Like, that relatively is still a big deal. But, like, that's what the Jay Bruce trade made me curious about. Because, like, yes, Jay Bruce didn't get a lot. But Mike Leake, he's not great. He's not great.
Is he not great?
He is not great.
Analysis you can only get here, yeah. Folks.
But, like, so for a team like, you know, he was linked to San Diego in the offseason. He's linked to Arizona yesterday, basically. These, you know, he is a guy who can handle 180, 190 innings, yeah. Six innings an outing, can make it easier on the rest of a young team that has, like, you know, for San Diego, for instance, like, this is a team that could make the playoffs this year, but yeah. Has a lot of young pitchers that are probably going to hit pitching limits. Yeah. Mike Leake can make it a lot easier on that team just by soaking up innings into his beachy skin.
Correct. That is how skin works.
Exactly. So, like, you know, it's you know, even if he's just an average pitcher, like, that's someone who is, I would say, probably more valuable than Jay Bruce is likely going to be. And it's ultimately going to come down to, are the Mariners also willing to eat a lot of money for Mike Leake?
Of course.
If that's the case, I think we could see, you know, it's not going to be amazing, but it's again, it's filling in the edges of that system. It's filling in the, you know, it's filling in the guys who left the system to fill in rental players. You know, it's getting someone like Bryson Brigman or Freddie. Well, you know, and that, like, that stuff where it's like we dealt guys who were, you know, would not have been high level prospects any other system, but help give you depth in a system that doesn't have a ton going on. And if you fill that in again, then you're in an okay spot. So I think that we could see something similar to that for Mike Leake. I think we could see something similar to that for several of the players that the Mariners have right now.
Yeah, I would just love to see Mike Leake in the playoffs, because then maybe we could get like a Mike Leake podium game where he just balls out and has to do an interview and just clearly hates it, like a Kawhi Leonard situation where he plays too well and actually sabotages himself because then people want to talk to him and all he wants to do is go home.
That is pretty much an internal Mike Leake mood.
I'm choosing to believe
he always wants to go home.
Exactly. I'm choosing to believe he sounds like Jackson Maine from A Star Is Born with that sort of gravelly, like, want to take another look at you. That's what I'm getting. Yeah.
All right.
Yeah. Someone told me I had a hot voice recently, and boy, has that gone to my head. It is unreal.
Ooh.
And that, we don't need to talk about that.
But I'm interested.
It was Jerry DePoto. He listens.
Oh, well, DePoto has a weird voice.
He said he only listens to his own podcast after he listens to the Lookout Landing podcast to make sure that we're not, you know, talking about the same thing.
That's the wheelhouse. This is the real house.
Ooh. Look at bongos out of nowhere.
And, oh, he's so pleased with himself.
He is.
Listeners, he looks so pleased with himself all right now.
Let's, we're getting towards the end here, so we're going to move to listener questions. This one is great. Comes on the heel.
Did we actually talk about the draft at all, or no?
Yeah, we said some stuff.
Yeah,
okay. We said some names.
Okay, sure.
They're on the team now.
Okay, listener questions it is.
Listener questions. So this one comes on the heels. I feel like I should provide context in case people don't know. In the NBA Finals, Kyle Lowry was chasing a loose ball, fell into the crowd, and was shoved by a fan who turned out to be a partial owner of the Golden State Warriors.
Oh, that is.
And a literal multi-billionaire.
Yeah, venture capitalist, the guy who would be sitting courtside at the Warriors and own a stake in the team. He has since been banned from the finals, but we have a question from Cash Rugley, who wants to know, if a Seattle celebrity got in trouble for shoving a player at a game, who would it be and why? So the key here is to just, I mean, there's not that many Seattle celebrities. So the key is, I think, one, who would be courtside at an NBA Finals game? And who would be rowdy enough to actually, or just a bad enough person, if you want to go down that route, to actually push a person who's playing a game for their entertainment?
So Seattle celebrity.
Correct.
Who would push a person who's playing a game for their entertainment?
I have one in mind.
I'm going to go with Joel McHale.
Joel McHale. I can see that. I can see Joel McHale off like 7 vodka tonics.
Yep, exactly.
Forgetting how to act.
Like just 7 vodka diet tonics.
Yeah.
and just being like, again, with a lot of white men, I think you scratch them just a little and some ugliness shows through.
I can see it.
Very much my experience on Twitter today.
Sure. I was going to go a different route. I was thinking in the situation, hypothetically, this would be a Sonics or a Seattle basketball game where we are at home, our fans are excited, an enemy player comes into the crowd who is sitting front row, but actual royalty himself, Sir Mix-a-Lot, is upset.
Oh.
And if it's Kyle Lowry, I mean, I don't know if you guys have seen Kyle Lowry's ass. It is enormous. Sir Mix-a-Lot. Yeah, Sir Mix-a-Lot became famous for his love of ass. I think it's a match made in heaven. I think in this situation, Sir Mix-a-Lot not only shoves, but grabs the ass on his way out and gets probably thrown out. So, does anyone else want to weigh in on Seattle celebrities?
I don't know if I can weigh in on who becomes the venture capitalist shoving or grabbing a player.
Right.
But I do think that once the Sonics are back, Macklemore might be our Drake.
Oh, God.
Oh, God.
I will not watch if that's the case. I'll watch only the road games.
But I do think I could easily see this happening.
No, it would happen.
Are we not Jeff Bezos into any of this? Are we, I mean,
I think Bezos would be a little shook. Yeah.
I don't think he's a shover.
No.
I think he'd be courtside. I just don't think he's a shover.
I don't know. I think he might be, like, up in the suites, like, eating some shrimp. And just like, I mean, I don't want to have
exactly.
any.
Yeah.
Just up in the suites with his mistresses.
You know,
like 14 of them.
You know who is courtside and definitely like is got some deep-seated anger is Kenny G. That is someone.
Is he here?
Went to Franklin.
What?
Yep.
Where do you think he learned how to play like that?
Embarrassing.
I think those curls are high.
Does he have his instrument with him, courtside?
Yeah, is he beating someone over the head with the soprano saxophone?
Yeah, did he like play the anthem and then just like is chilling?
I hope he like brings it out and then just starts.
I mean, he's not doing any damage himself with his noodle arms.
And then just whips it across.
I love how. Yeah,
I think that's a
Michael.
Right, but that's
his song.
Right, but like his normal vibe.
You think he's the careless whisper of a person?
I think like when he gets attacked, he like it flips a switch. It flips a careless whisper switch.
Oh, that's not the song you would use for like an
attack. I just want to recognize that John was able to like beat boop his way into a recognizable song.
Yeah. One of the most recognizable songs.
I'm not doubting the song's recognition ability. I'm doubting your ability to make it recognizable.
Kenny G is for an American.
Absolutely. No, I'm not saying it. I'm saying a switch flips.
Wait, it's not his song originally, but he became famous for it.
I thought that was Michael Bolton. Does Kenny G sing?
I don't think Kenny G
is. That is Michael Bolton.
I mixed up Kenny
G, I don't think sings at all.
Yeah.
No, he doesn't sing. He just
plays
his...
Michael Bolton's that guy in Office
Space,
right?
Yeah. Why should I have to change his name? He's the one who sucks. All right, good answers by all. Okay, let's
yes,
go.
Okay, yes, Kenny G. Kenny G also, like, definitely probably also a vampire.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah.
Which is why.
That does bring me to my next
what
point I was
tribe.
Going to make. Two sharp teeth is not part of the original Slavic vampire lore.
Oh.
Traditionally, it's just sharp teeth in general, and that's probably because when bodies decompose, their gums recede to make the teeth look longer and sharper. The first movie to have the two teeth was actually Nosferatu the Vampire in 1979.
Banger.
So don't come at me and tell me that two sharp canine teeth mean that I'm a
vampire.
He's
done a lot to try and hide this identity.
Let's move on. Let's move on. We have a question that is tailor-made for one.
No, stop.
Okay.
We have a possible vampire in the organization now.
What?
Yes.
Other than Nick Rumble.
No, yeah. Well, I mean, he's definitely a daywalker. But we have Adam Macko.
Oh, that's right.
Oh, new draft pick. Left-handed pitcher out of high school.
Left-handed pitcher out of Vauxhall Baseball Academy, which I Googled, and basically looks like a place in Alberta, Canada,
Great
where,
White
like,
North, baby.
You go and just kind of like... play baseball all the time. But he was born in Slovakia.
Dude, all...
Is that racist?
I was going to say, I think
he
we might want to cut this.
He was born in Slovakia. His dad's name is Vladimir, And so? When little young Adam came home and told his dad he wanted to play baseball, he had signed up for baseball because there was baseball tryouts at his school. Sign up.
You're on the team.
No, literally. Yeah, yeah. Literally. Because it's Slovakia.
Right.
It's Bratislava, Slovakia. Like, nobody plays baseball. But there was baseball tryouts at his school. And he went and just, like, discovered this love for the game. And so he went home and told his father, Vladimir,
he's probably a
that
nice
he
man.
Wanted to play baseball. And Vladimir said, quote, "Baseball in Slovakia? Impossible!"
All right, that was a good story. And then he swooped his cape and left the room.
Exactly. Yeah. So I started immediately writing a Matt Christopher book called Dracula's Son Plays Third Base.
Oh, the vampire who played baseball?
Yes. Yeah, basically. Is that already a...
That might be a
Matt Christopher book. Actually already be a book. But anyway, Adam Macko, welcome to the team. We love you. Sorry I called you a vampire. But also, I love you.
Cool. All right,
go ahead with the next
one. This is actually perfect. You kind of teed it up for me. This question is also tailor-made for you, but the thing you just said really blends into it well.
All right.
This one comes from Jason Ruffcorn. Which draft pick has the best parent?
Oh, well, I mean...
We have two. You have Vladimir, but we also have the man you introduced me to earlier on social media.
Oh!
Beef Dad!
Beef Dad! Yeah,
we're all about beefy parental units in Lookout Landing.
Extra points if they're tatted wearing AirPods in the one picture I've seen of them.
We do love our Beef Dad.
This
dads.
Man, who's the kid?
It's Reed Morgan.
Reed Morgan, of
who
course.
Who is,
second
baseman?
I'm
on it.
No, he's a pitcher.
13th round pick from South Carolina. He's a pitcher.
Yes. Who has, like, some pretty good flow himself.
Good flow,
pretty handsome
but
dad.
You're burying the lead here,
but
Kate.
The lead is he has a giant tatted dad. Like, I'm talking there's a full leg,
right.
Full arms.
I saw this on Twitter, but I have to ask. If you have a full leg sleeve, is that called a pant? Like a pant tattoo?
Oh, right, because an arm is
an arm is a sleeve, is a leg.
So
yo, pant me up. Pants. You just go in and
is it a legging? Like what is
yeah.
What is the what?
I don't know the nomenclature here. But the dad is
we'll append this picture to the podcast because
somehow,
everyone
yeah.
or to the article because everyone needs to see this. It is badass. It is dope. I would put this man in, like, the great dad face-off that who is it? Is it Josh Bell's dad?
Yeah, he's
huge?
A beef dad.
Yeah, he's a beef dad.
Stroman's dad.
Stroman's dad. Tyler O'Neill's dad.
Yeah,
also,
Mr. Canada.
Yeah, if we can cross sports, Yusuf Nurkic's dad is a cop in Bosnia.
That's true.
He's enormous.
Yeah. And Yusuf himself.
Yes, yeah. I will put Reed Morgan's dad in with all these other dads in the great dad Thunderdome.
Sort of a roguish dad, I think, more perhaps. But
dad
still.
Theon.
This dad plays
the
dirty.
Dad Theon.
Dad will break a bottle and shiv you into
that.
Yeah,
owns legal smoke bombs.
Yeah,
yeah.
And again, we will share the image.
Of
but,
course.
So yeah, Vladimir is a big
Vlad Dad,
Reed Morgan. But we also have to give some big shout outs to Austin Shenton's mom.
Correct.
Right?
Oh yeah, big time.
Yes. So Austin Shenton is our fifth round pick, the first position player that we took. Yes,
mm-hmm.
Yes.
Yeah,
third baseman from Florida International University, but a Bellingham native.
Yeah,
who played a couple years or played at Bellevue College. Yes,
maybe.
Yes,
yes. Played at Bellevue College, was drafted, was not drafted very highly coming out of high school. Played at Bellevue College, trying to, like, boost his draft stock. Didn't get drafted. Got some feedback from scouts about what to do. Went to Florida International. And then just kind of destroyed it there. And is a super cool dude.
Yeah,
like,
talk about his photography Instagram.
He has a... Well, I mean, it's his Instagram, but there's
right,
a lot
yeah,
of...
Yeah.
A lot of pictures here.
Truly
beginning.
Impressive work, too.
I mean, they're good
pictures. I'm not usually
like,
a big
we're
fan.
We're not just, like, blowing him up
right.
because he is our draft prospect, like our guy.
I'm usually not moved by
legit good pictures.
Photography as art never really does a lot for me, but these are like really good, especially for someone who's doing it as a hobby, like not as his career.
He's a big environmentalist, conservationist. He's a vegetarian. He dreams one day of opening a plant-based restaurant to show everyone that, like,
that baseball players actually have other things they like, too.
I mean, it is a vegetarian. The vegetarian food can be good, too. But
That part, it's not all beef.
He's a poet. He's a Renaissance man. He's a Renaissance man. And his mom, sadly, unfortunately, got cancer.
Yeah.
This was right before he went back to Florida International for his junior year, and he offered to stay home. He wanted to take care of her. It's kind of him, his dad, his mom, and then he has a brother who has special needs who had a stroke when he was, like, in utero and is a huge fan, like probably his biggest fan, especially when he played for the Bellingham Bells, like came out to all the games. So he offered to stay at home, and his mom was like, no, you have to keep chasing your dream, and sent him off to school. And then his Florida International teammates all banded together, and they wore bracelets that said Mama Shint and Shint Strong and all that. And he scuffled a little. She at one point Googled how to bust a batting slump and send him tips. So
what did she find? Do we know? We should probably keep that one under wraps.
I would love to send that to maybe Mitch Haniger, who's maybe leading the league in strikeouts.
The entire Mariners roster besides Dan Vogelback.
Dan Vogelback is friends with him.
Look at that.
Vogie loves him.
Call that synergy, folks.
Vogie was like all over his Instagram commenting on stuff.
Vogie's a noted businessman.
Vogie's so great. But anyway, so she sent him that, and he like rebounded and put up enough good numbers over the end of the year to kind of put himself in line with what he had done earlier. But anyway, Mama Shint, we stand Mama Shint.
We stand Mama Shint.
In this house, we stand
Mama Shint. We stand a rebound year from Austin Shenton.
Absolutely, and Austin Shint has very kindly agreed to come on the podcast at some point.
So wow, he's coming for my job.
We're going to have
a
conversation
with
him.
He's definitely coming for my job. I am the expendable one of this group.
That's fair. It's a clear trade chip over here in that Expo shirt.
I'm just afraid of you that you'll, like...
Not a vampire.
That's what a vampire would say.
Exactly.
I've seen a lot of vampire
movies. What a vampire would say. Feels like an unfair standard.
Grant, right. what are you doing, like, 2 days from now? You gonna have a vampire weekend? Good night, everybody!
Oh, my God. And with that, bye.